hot video. I'm going to go to, I have a bunch of videos to go to in this final hour. A lot of stories still to cover. In this first 5 minutes, I want to go to clip number 13 here. This is the woman who was viciously beaten after attending a jazz concert in Cincinnati, I believe. Several white people set on and viciously beaten by a group of black people for no discernible reason. Following this, the perpetrators of this were let out on bail almost instantly, in a very low number. The, you know, various authorities in the city came out to basically blame the victims and say, well, you know, they were kind of asking for it. In fact, you had one of the, I believe, city councilors of Cincinnati saying they were asking for it. Basically, they deserved it. And it was funny what happened to them. And everybody came out to try to distract from the reality of what we all are witnessing with our own eyes in order to continue to persist in the demonization of white people and protection of black people against consequences of their own actions. Let's go to clip number 13 here.
First and foremost, I just want to say that I don't want to relive what happened to me, you know, 8 or 9 days ago. I'm here to talk about the future and how we can change it, how we can prevent this from happening to anybody else. These heinous crimes have to stop. You know, I never want this to happen to anyone else, especially a mother, a daughter, somebody who is loved. So I just know what it's done to my family, not just to me. And I think that moving forward, we do need more accountability. And I definitely think that, you know, we need more police officers. But like he said, you know, the judges who are just letting people out with a slap. The man who attacked me and might have permanently damaged me forever should never have been on the streets, ever. And the fact that he had just gotten out of jail previously for something he should have been in there for years, it's really sad to me because I can't even fathom how many other people who have been attacked by the same type of man over and over and over in Toledo, in Columbus, Cincinnati, Dayton. Our streets are being taken over and nobody is doing anything. I am so sad. And I need to be the voice to help all of the victims that never got their justice. The biggest thing that I think really upsets me is the desensitization of humans, where somebody, there's a brutal attack, attempted murder in front of you, and they all think, oh, cool, let me get my phone and record it. I truly hope that in the future there's some sort of bill to where somebody has to be prosecuted or at least fined if they don't call 911 first to save someone's life. I have felt hopeless for the future of my children, what kind of world they're going to grow up in, because it has just gotten, you know, worse and worse.
Just absolutely brutal, beaten by somebody that should have never been out on the streets, who has a history of beating random innocent people up. And then, of course, the horror of having, first of all, as she points out, people just stand around and watch it happen, laugh at it, think it's funny, film it instead of calling 911 at the very least, let alone, you know, stepping in to stop the brutal gang beating. And of course, there, you know, in a lot of ways, there is no solution to this outside of a governmental solution. What would your advice be for Holly? Carry a gun? Do you think that would have helped in that situation? Or do you think there were probably other people carrying a gun and it would have just become a murder situation? Or if you bring out the gun, I mean, look at the way they treated her when she did nothing other than have her skull cracked open on the concrete. They still demonized her. What if she pulled the gun out? She'd be spending the rest of her life in prison. So the only solution to this is government. It's law and order. It's putting the criminals in prison until they can be executed for their crimes. That's it.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm cutting this on the afternoon of July 30th, 2025. You have 7 days from this date to buy one bottle of any of our amazing supplements, the Ultramethylene Blue, the Irish Sea Moss, the Shilajit, the list goes on and on, Ultimate Life Force, and get a bottle absolutely free. But you got to be a VIP. But that's the best part. This catch is a great deal. You spend $30 a month being a subscriber, you cancel any time, and you get $40 to spend in the store. Special deals, special offers just sent to you, and you can cancel any time. So you make $10 by becoming a subscriber, you can cancel any time. It's only running for 7 days. Experience Ultramethylene Blue. Experience the other incredible supplements. But also, the buy one, get one free goes for the ball caps, the t-shirts, the widest selection of Patriot apparel. Those of you who've never gotten products, now's the time. It'll blow you away. Get the Methylene Blue, bare minimum, at thealexofstore.com.
You're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The American Journal. Third hour is on. And I've just been handed a directive here. There is less than 14 hours left in the buy one, get one sale on the alexjonesstore.com. So if you want to take advantage of the incredible offers available right now at the alexjonesstore.com, buy one, get one on all merchandise and supplements, you got 14 hours left. But you might want to go ahead and do it now. You might want to just do it right now. And also, our incredible turmeric supplement is now back in stock, and you can get that for up to 50% off when you subscribe, and you'll never run out again. It's the ultimate turmeric with ginger root and black pepper. Packed with a potent combination of turmeric extract, ginger root, and black pepper, the Alex Jones Store brings you a supplement designed to support healthy joints, promote inflammation balance, and boost antioxidant defenses like nothing else on the market. Turmeric extract has been used for millennia for its anti-inflammatory properties. It helps reduce inflammation in the body, beneficial for joint health and chronic pain conditions. It's an antioxidant, and it helps neutralize free radicals and boost the body's own antioxidant enzymes. It also supports brain health and may enhance cognitive function and reduce the risk of neurodegenerative diseases. And it's combined with the power of ginger root extract, which also has anti-inflammatory properties to it. It helps alleviate muscle pain, joint pain, and stiffness. It boosts immunity, supports cardiovascular health, and has very powerful antioxidant properties, protecting cells from oxidative damage. Again, what we do at InfoWars is not complicated. It's not something unnatural that we've had to formulate in a lab somewhere. It's very, very simple. Turmeric is astonishingly good for you, especially the curcuminoids. We extract those at the maximum possible amount, package them up with, you know, other supplements that work in combination with one another so that the sum is greater than the parts. And then we package it up in a, you know, cheap, affordable, and accessible way. But it's not anything that we're like adding to your body. It just maximizes your body's own natural functions. Turmeric, ginger root, black pepper extract, all this stuff, again, incredibly powerful. And if you eat it with your food, you're going to get some effect. But when you isolate their curcuminoids, when you maximize their bioavailability through the absorption and the combination with synergistic other supplements, you're really feeling the full effect. And what it does is just make sure that your body is running as well as it can. It's like a tune-up. It's like a tune-up for your cells, just making sure that they're running at full capacity and maximizing your antioxidant and immune functions that are the shield against the poisons in our environment. Go now to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison if you want to let them know who sent you. Now, we just played that video of the woman in Cincinnati speaking up about the horror that she went through and how it is directly attributable to the policies about law enforcement that her city leaders employ. I'm very proud of her for doing this. It's always astonished me that more victims don't speak out about what they go through. Seems like a lot of people, and I guess I understand it. You get beaten, the video goes viral, I would understand just not wanting anything to do with it. And that's what most people do. But then some people come out and like apologize for being beaten, or they castigate and you know, try to shout down the people that are defending them, right? When there's some racial event where, you know, a white person is beaten or stabbed for their race, and then other white people go, hey, this was a racial thing, and then the victim's dad comes out and goes, you shut up! You do not defend my child! And it's like, that I don't under, that I cannot fathom or comprehend. That is beyond my ability to empathize. However, we have talked about the fact that there's actually a civil rights like operation in the government that sends people out to talk to victims to make sure that they downplay the racial aspects if and when it's a attack against white people. So it's probably not easy to stand up. Now, here's the real damning part of our entire culture. Here's the part of the story that tells you what the real, you know, situation is here. This woman's name is Holly. The woman who was knocked unconscious during a violent brawl in Cincinnati said one of her first media interviews, she's lucky to be alive. Holly, who has requested that her name be withheld due to threats she's been receiving, told the Inquirer she's been in and out of hospitals over the last 10 days. Why is she receiving threats? Do we understand what an insane thing that is? This woman was minding her own business, was standing on the side of the road waiting for an Uber to come when the people that she was with were attacked by a mob. She was attacked. She was brutalized. She was knocked unconscious with the back of her head hitting the concrete. And now people are threatening her. What? Like, really let that sink in. People are threatening her because she got beat up before she ever made a statement, which, of course, is the statement wouldn't be an excuse to threaten her anyway. But at least then you could say, well, she put herself in the public and people, you know, people are going to have backlash to public figures. She was just the victim of a crime. She was just randomly beaten. And now she's receiving death threats against her. What? Yeah, that no, but that's just where we are at this point. That's where we are at this point. Is somehow that by being the victim of a racially motivated attack, you are now the bad guy. I guess because you're a living example of the fulfillment of the stereotype, I guess your existence is now hate speech. Because you are the reality that confirms the stereotype. She suffers brain trauma. She's in the hospital. And people are doxing her, identifying her, and threatening her life. And her only crime was being savagely beaten by a man. So yeah, I mean, we got a problem with crime. We got a problem with police enforcement not being at the level it should. We got a problem with early bail release and all this crap. But none of that addresses the real underlying turmoil that's taking place here, which is that there are huge swaths of this country that genuinely burn with hatred against white people. And are basically mad that she wasn't killed and want to finish the job. Now, that problem is a lot bigger and a lot wider scope and a lot more disturbing than any of the process issues or policy distinctions. And so, you know, I want to get back into Israel a little bit because there's still stuff that we haven't talked about when it comes to that. And I see a way of sort of merging these two stories. And I was just thinking about it during the break, and I'm not sure how exactly to present this other than to say that we may have reached critical mass. We may have, you know, hit whatever checkpoint we've been headed towards for a while. And it's almost like you're playing one of those games where you drop in the coin and it drops down, the little shelf is pushing it forward, and you're trying to knock the coins down one of these sort of pseudo gambling games. You see a David Busters. It's almost like there's this big stack of coins right on the edge, and we're just waiting for that final coin to drop and the whole thing to come collapsing down. Because one of, if not the most powerful psychological levers, I'm not sure if that's the way to put it, but one of those powerful psychological levers that the powers that be pull to keep the population in check is liberal white women. Liberal white women are just endlessly useful for the powers that be for a couple of reasons, right? If you go back to George Orwell, 1984, there's that great and very still to this day, very pertinent passage about how the most, you know, valuable members of the party were the young women, because the young women could be radicalized unlike any other demographic and could be convinced to be the most vicious enforcers of the party's decrees. And that's what we're seeing in today's world. And again, there's lots of reasons for this. There's biology and, you know, the fact that we evolved to have self-preservation as our highest priority. And for women, that has always meant acceptance by a group. Your acceptance within a group is your safety, is your shield, is your guarantee of survival. Never in history, till very, very recently, was like a woman could just go off on her own, right? She'd be killed or kidnapped or stolen, right? Men could to a certain degree, but that was never something women did. So women literally evolved to maximize their acceptance within whatever group they find themselves in. So they're extremely vulnerable to peer pressure. It was always the women, above all the young ones, who were the most bigoted adherents to the party, the swallowers of slogans, the amateur spies and nosers out of unorthodoxy. Okay, there's another aspect to this. That is, everybody wants to be on the side of the hot girls. And it's kind of like you can kind of tell the trajectory of a nation by what the beautiful women are doing, because the men are going to want to do what the beautiful women want, and the not beautiful women are going to want to mimic the beautiful women. Beautiful women like set the trends of nations. And this has, again, been true for a very long time. Now, part of what that means is not that young women are always going to be left-wing, not that they're always going to be the enforcers of the liberal orthodoxy, but that they will be the most powerful enforcers of whatever the general consensus is. So if you're in the Soviet Union, the young women are the most prominent and aggressive supporters of the communist system and the Communist Party. If that same group of young women grew up in Nazi Germany, they would be the most dedicated and hardcore Nazis. It's just a fact of psychology. Trends, it's just the way that we work. And so for a long time, young women in this country, especially young white women, especially young liberal white women, have been used to, you know, enforce the orthodoxy and establish the in-group and the out-group and push liberalism and leftism. Now, they've been able to do that because, to a very large extent, they've been shielded from the consequences of the policies that they support. Right? It's usually wealthy liberal white women who will be the ones holding the sign saying refugees welcome. And then it's the lower class girls in the ghettos that get to live next to the imported rapist. But I think we may be hitting a critical mass the mission of the liberal white women may have been so successful at this point that's going to be affecting them. And I think there's going to be a very quick turnaround where young women in a first world nation with a sense of impenetrable safety just do not have, they aren't concerned about their well-being. They aren't concerned about their safety. So they don't see the problem in letting in millions of foreigners. It's like they can't even imagine that being a problem. They just want to, you know, indulge in like motherly instincts against people they have pity for and therefore you treat like babies, foreigners, brown people, whatever. But what's going to happen when white women stop feeling safe? I guess is the question I'm here to ask. What's going to happen when white women are no longer granted their privileged position in this society and realize the people that they've helped build up and they've supported don't actually like them and aren't going to treat them well, and in fact, kind of viciously hate them and are out to destroy them? I think you're going to see that survival instinct kick in again, and you're going to see a lot of girls and women going, what the hell? I need to be protected. This isn't okay. I thought I was going to be protected here. Who's going to protect me now? So again, this might be a stretch. This might be, you know, seeing a trend where it doesn't exist. But how many videos like the one out of Cincinnati are we going to see before things flip, before things switch, before that stack of coins of the political impact of young women flips to the other side, reverses course? Because that's not the only example that we have. There's also this story about the young woman from Florida State University who's learning that she's not exactly on the top of the victim totem pole anymore. And is in fact being severely punished for daring to speak out against the master race in this country. And when this first broke, Aaron Deckerhoff was caught on video basically cursing out an IDF soldier in Florida State. And there's a video of it, and we'll play the video here in just a second, just to remind you what it looked like. But I put out a tweet saying, if anybody knows this Aaron girl, get us in contact. I'd like to interview her, not only to get her side of the story, but in case she wants to start a GoFundMe or some sort of legal defense, because she's going to need one. And I had people respond to me on this, going, wow, so you support somebody being randomly assaulted for their shirt? I thought this was free speech. I thought you supported free speech. And I want to explain this. When it comes to anti-Semitism, just like when it comes to Israel, for some reason, the concept of let the punishment fit the crime completely flies out the window. And we've watched as Florida has systematically implemented law after law after law, each one restricting the First Amendment, limiting the First Amendment, imposing hate crime and hate speech designations on what would otherwise not even be crimes. And so the instant that I saw this girl come under massive attack for cursing out a Jewish person, I thought, they're going to try to send this girl to prison. They're going to try to send her to prison under hate crime charges. And under Florida statutes, she could potentially go to prison for like 20 years. Okay, she's now been charged with battery. They've not gone with a hate crime designation on it. So, thankfully, maybe she won't be spending decades in prison for daring to question the chosen people. But that is where we're headed. So again, I had people going, you think it's okay that this girl, you're supporting this you know, blue-haired leftist assaulting people just because of the shirt they're wearing? It's like, no, obviously I don't support somebody assaulting somebody for the shirt they're wearing. But I believe the punishment should fit the crime. And I think an IDF soldier hearing mean words and having a little girl touch his phone is not worth the Attorney General of the United States getting involved or the Republican congressman from Florida, Randy Fine, demanding she have her life ruined over it. Again, there's this continuity, there's this similarity where you go, hey, you know, I don't like that Israel is starving babies to death. And they go, but October 7th, though. It's like, what do you not understand about let the punishment fit the crime? Saying this punishment is uncalled for, ridiculous, outrageous, and completely out of whack with what actually happened is not to say that the thing that happened was therefore good. I shouldn't even have to explain this, and it's obviously just rhetorical, you know, trickery being deployed in claiming that, oh, if you're against this prescribed punishment, you therefore think crime is okay. That's literally the argument that was being made. I don't know if the crew can pull it up. Laura Luma responded to me, making the same argument. Oh, so you think it's okay that somebody was assaulted? It's like, oh, they're assault. Oh, they were assaulted, were they? Oh, and a 95-pound little girl knocked the arm of a 200-pound man. Oh my gosh, did he survive? But is he okay, though? I mean, she can cover his hospital bills. I think that's fair. So, we knew this was coming. We knew this was coming. That they were going to try to destroy her life for this. Again, I had people going, so she should be allowed to assault whoever she wants. If this was any other situation, nobody would have ever heard about it. Probably 99% of the people at FSU would have never heard about it. I guarantee you 1,000 instances like this happen every single day at college campuses all across America, where there's some very minor, less than 10-second conflict where one person says rude words to another. That became a national story because of how rare it is, I guess. Would anybody be complaining if the school said, hey, you know, that behavior completely violates our student code of conduct? You are banned from the student center for a month. That would be reasonable to me. Yeah, she was rude. So ban her from the student union or wherever that was for a month. Make her apologize. Have her write a letter saying I'm sorry for using the language that I used. But no, they're charging her with battery. And the Attorney General of the United States launched an investigation. And FSU shut down and brought in counselors for everybody to deal with the trauma of this event, and it's ridiculous.
All the guests, dozens of them that have taken it, within 45 minutes to an hour, have varying degrees from extreme energy and feel really great, to fog lifting, to just over the top crying and feel so good. Cleans out the cells, just does incredible things. RFK Jr. loves it. We've got the strongest ultramethylene blue, but he's going on Owen in about 30 minutes. My show just ended, I forgot to do this. Don't forget when he's on Owen. To tell us what he felt. And if he doesn't feel it, we'll put that out. So start, go ahead and take a half dropper or so. That's about a half dose. And then go ahead and shut that down. And then we're going to find out what happens to you. We'll see. Most people, it hits within about 30 minutes. It starts peaking after a couple hours. But just tell people what you think. And if you don't feel it, we're going to tell everybody.
20 minutes later.
I can feel a definite, like, an energy spike. Yeah, it feels pretty good.
What are you going to do now? Now that you have your energy spike.
I'm going to see if it has a crash.
I've never heard of a crash.
Yeah, apparently it doesn't. But yeah, it feels pretty good. Yeah, definitely I feel sharper.
Okay.
Yeah, because I was pretty tired coming in here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was.
Well, you're running around Texas right now. You're dealing with some other issues here.
I was driving all over Texas giving speeches for True Texas Project.
So did he give you the drink or the capsules?
I took the drink, but I got a bottle of each, and I'm going to go and do a longer-term test. We'll see how it goes.
Okay.
Yeah, I do feel kind of amped right now. Yeah.
Several weeks later.
You just saw an ad for Methylene Blue. You were here a few weeks ago, and I do this with every guest, more than 50 of them now. Every person has had clarity, energy, a fog lift is the most common. But what's really good is the long-term effects for your stamina, your energy, your libido, your how hard you can work out. It's amazing. So I had forgotten when he was coming in, we gave him a bottle because he loved it.
Almost gone.
I had forgotten to ask you if you listened and did it long-term. So just briefly, tell people the short-term effect, and then now, a few weeks later, the long-term effect.
Yeah, it gives you a good energy boost. I use it before I work out. So if I'm going to be doing kettlebell workouts, I do some Methylene Blue about a half hour before, and it just gives you mental focus. I don't crash afterwards. That's good stuff. I need some more.
We'll give you some. How fast did it kick in?
About 15, 20 minutes. I take about a half hour before my workout.
And then you're saying you're almost out of the bottle. Was that 3 weeks ago, a month ago?
Something like that. You give me the liquid and the pills, too.
You're almost out of both?
Yeah, I'm almost out of both.
Oh, my goodness. Well, all right. I'll give you more. Right. For the audience, we can't give it to everybody. We need your support at theallstreetsword.com. For me personally, the first week I got on it, now 4 or 5 months ago, I actually started to hurt myself because the workouts were so crazy. My trainer goes, dude, what's going on? Like 3 days into it. I go, I don't know. I was lifting way more, going way harder. And then I got really exhausted after about a week because the same thing happened to Rob Dew, who's a great long-distance, bike rider. So he's quite the athlete. He said he was biking so hard up hills and stuff that he actually had to pull over because, his heart was going crazy. I mean, this stuff's wild.
Yeah, it's good. I like it better than doing like a 5-hour energy shot because those will make you crash afterwards. This doesn't have the crash.
So you've had no crash.
Right.
It's not a stimulant. It just skips the oxidization process somehow.
So I've been using it while I'm out there doing search and rescue. That's why I'm almost out.
You're saying you love it for working out. Has it gotten better over time, or what long-term thing have you felt, or if nothing?
Well, I think the main thing is it gives me a better workout, and that has good results over time. Yeah, for sure.
That's what I found without even knowing.
Yeah.
And then O'Keefe's like, oh, it made my vision better, and Rob Dew goes, we have a bunch of callers already saying that. Did you see these studies about it, like curing glaucoma? And I'm not going to say, we're not selling it as a drug. I'm not saying it's going to do that. I'm like, God, this stuff's crazy. No, they don't want you to know about it. It's like ivermectin.
Right, exactly. Old school stuff.
But you can't take it if you're on SSRIs. And folks, it's so strong. Talk to your doctor first because it's not a game. Ours is really strong. If you'll just try it, you'll be hooked. And we can fund the operation. It's a win-win. We'll be right back with Stuart Rhodes.
You're watching The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch live right now at band.video.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Again, I saw this coming from a while ago. This young woman, former SFU employee, arrested after alleged hate crime towards student caught in viral video. Eden Deckerhoff, 23, was charged with battery in connection with the incident that transpired Wednesday. According to recent court records, she's accused of confronting a student who court records say was Jewish and was wearing a shirt representing the Israeli Defense Forces when the incident occurred and making profane statements directed at Israel. How dare she? That's illegal. As of Tuesday, Deckerhoff has been released from jail, court documents show. She was charged following an incident into the confrontation conducted on Thursday, just a day after the incident. Law enforcement reviewed the now viral footage of the confrontation, which court's records revealed occurred inside the Leech Recreational Center. The video showed a woman later identified as Deckerhoff and a man later identified as a Florida State student in frame. Court records identified Deckerhoff as a current FSU employee, but FSU spokesperson clarified that she is a former employee. The footage went on to show Deckerhoff flipping off the student who appeared to be filming the video in the recreation center. Per court records, she was also heard in the video making a statement laced with profanity aimed at Israel. They appear to show Dekkerhoff hitting the male's shoulder area while attempting to reach for his beverage on the table. Just before the video concluded, the student was observed leaning back in a defensive manner as if he was pushed by the female. But it's okay. He survived, folks. He survived. Don't worry. He was able to handle it. At about 7 p.m., the 23-year-old suspect was seen approaching the student, whose court paper show was sitting down at the recreational center on his cell phone. Yeah, they were having a conversation. She appeared to become upset. Moments later, Dekkerhoff was seen moving into his personal space and touching his shoulder in a shoving motion while attempting to reach for his beverage. Shortly after, the student was observed leaning back, blah, blah, blah. Surveillance footage also revealed Dekkerhoff spoke with a recreational center staff member before she exited the recreational center. The following day, authorities interviewed the student, a recreational center employee who was seen being approached by Dekkerhoff shortly after the incident occurred. He was wearing an IDF shirt, which signifies the National Military of Israel. Made contact with him. So let's go to the video now. The guy went on to state that Dekkerhoff, quote, definitely just hate crimed him. I've been hate crimed. That woman just hate crimed me. Let's go ahead and roll the video. We'll see if we can't make some observations about it, shall we?
Israel, free Palestine, put it on Barstool FSU. I really don't give a f-. You're an ignorant son of a bitch.
It seemed to me like she was reaching for the phone. Probably because she noticed she was being filmed. You know, a couple things about it. For one thing, you don't... You know what I should have done? Just this weekend, Randy Fine participated in a press conference of some sort. Something like Voices for Freedom, Florida, something like that. And he's talking about wearing his yarmulke on the floor of the Congress and being the first congressman ever to wear a yarmulke on the floor of the Capitol. And he says, I'm wearing it because, you know, I want to let little Jewish kids all over the country, you know that they should be proud and not afraid to, you know, express their Jewishness. He says, because places in this country, you know, it's a very big problem. The anti-Semitism, Jews being afraid to be found out, I guess. He says it's a very big problem, but we solved that in Florida. It's not a problem here, he says. It's not a problem in Florida. We solved that. And it just kind of struck me that, I mean, what he means is that they've passed laws to declare it a hate crime to insult Israel or Jews. And so you've got this, I guess, Jewish IDF soldier. They don't say his name. They don't say who he is, whether he's a student or whatever. I guess they said he was a student, but we don't know his name. We don't know if he was in the IDF. We don't know. We don't know what the deal is. But it seems to me like if you go to a college campus wearing the shirt of the IDF at a time when the IDF is pretty blatantly committing a genocide, it's not unlikely that you're going to cause some anger. And you know that. And you know that. And so you're in a way, you know, putting yourself at risk of being assaulted. If I put it this way, if I wear a Make America Great Again hat on UT campus, I'm not going to be surprised if someone says F you to me. I'm just not. Now, does that mean that, you know, it'd be okay for them to beat me up? Obviously not, right? I've been thinking about that video, you know, in connection with this. Similar kind of video, but it was in an In-N-Out in California, and there were children, there was like a 12 or like 13-year-old kid wearing a Make America Great Again hat, and some Hispanic adult man comes up and grabs his drink and throws it in his face, and it was all filmed. And of course, that didn't, you know, there was no condemnation from the attorney general there. There was no investigation launched. You didn't have congressmen, you know, coming out to demand that this person be charged with battery. I don't know if they ever were charged or ever even identified. It was a much more extreme example of
a very similar situation, but much more violent, much more, you know, unfair and one-sided on the side of the attacker. So, you know, I'm trying to keep this in perspective and go, all right, well, if you're just wearing a piece of clothing that expresses your political or spiritual belief and you get attacked for it, that's not fair and that's not okay and that's not how it should be. On the other hand, if I wear a red hat to a college campus, am I going to be surprised that I get cursed at? So was he was taken into custody. I wonder if he, served time for that or whatever. Yeah, similar story. Very, very different reactions. So it's a little bit of a different situation. If I wear a red hat to college campus, if there have recently been passed laws saying that attacking somebody in a red hat is a hate crime and you'll go to prison for it. It's a little bit different. It smacks to me of like entrapment or something. Where it's like, okay, you've now passed laws to basically say you should be allowed to do things that you know are going to cause a response, to do things that you know are going to be provocative, knowing that if anybody responds, they go to jail for a hate crime. And so when Randy Fine says, we fixed that in Florida, what he means is that in Florida, the Jewish people have been elevated above everybody else. And they now can act with impunity, but if you get riled up by them, if you respond to them in kind, it's a hate crime. I don't like the precedent that this is setting. I don't like that, you know, people feel the right to curse you out or to throw a drink on you because of what you're wearing. I'm against that, and that should be handled for what it is. Okay, if this girl says F you and tries to, you know, smack his phone because he's filming her, okay, maybe she can't go to the student center for a little while. That's an appropriate response. Now, if an adult, you know, attacks a child like the video from the Whataburger, all right, now we're in a little bit of a different situation. And again, you can charge a guy with assault in the same way that you would do if the red hat had nothing to do with it. Or if the IDF shirt had nothing to do with it. So the guy's smiling the whole time in the video. The guy posts the video afterwards with the caption wheezing, i.e. I'm laughing. I'm laughing so hard I'm wheezing because look at how mad this little girl got. And then he goes to the cops and says, I've been hate crimed. Okay. Haha, I'm laughing. I wore a shirt to deliberately provoke people. Now this girl got provoked. Look how funny it is, but also I'm going to get her charged for a hate crime. Isn't that hilarious? So I don't take this seriously. I'm not taking, you know, his outrage seriously. I'm not taking his offense seriously. That's his caption, wheezing. Laugh out loud, right? But then he goes up to a cop and says, I've been hate, quote, I was definitely just hate crimed. Police asked if he would like to press charges, in which police papers revealed he said he would like to make that decision later. The student also declined services from the student's victim advocate program, stating he had other resources in the Jewish community providing support. So again, I think that the justification for this is thin to the point of like non-existence, to where if you're claiming that this, the minorest of events, is worth federal attention and hate crime charges and battery charges and sending this girl to prison and literally ruining her life. I mean, apparently she's been completely kicked off of campus. So, you know, they said she was a former employee. I don't know if she was fired over this. I'd originally been hearing she was a student and that she'd been suspended from classes and not allowed to be on the campus at all anymore. And not that that would be out of line with other instances of this exact kind of situation. You know, it's funny. She says, you know, put me on Florida Barstool or whatever. So I guess that's a common thing. Barstool Sports, people posting videos. I don't know about that. But, you know, it does remind me of the Dave Portnoy situation where some guy has a sign that says F the Jews. And Dave Portnoy is like, I'm sending you to Auschwitz and I'm going to hunt you down and hired a private investigator and I'm going to ruin your life and destroy you. Because he said F Jews? Like, what? Where is the limiting factor? Where is the equal reaction? Where is the justification for these insane, overwrought reactions? It doesn't exist. Let the punishment fit the crime. If the crime is you said a word that Dave Portnoy doesn't like, the punishment should be you don't get to go to his bar anymore. That's fine. That's fair. He doesn't want you in the bar. He doesn't have to let you. It's his private property. This is America. That can be the end of that. You want to destroy his life over it? You want to publish his name and talk about how evil he is and how infuriated you are, hoping that something happens to him? I mean, this is sick. This is a really sick psychology. And we see it really pervasive. Dave Portnoy and the way this Eden girl is being treated. And we see it in the way, you know, Israel is conducting their war. There is this imbalance in the reaction that you have to fight against and that you have to be against. And I'm just trying to explain to you that the rhetorical trick they use is by saying, if you're against our insane, overwrought, life-destroying reaction, you must therefore be in favor of assault. Just like if you're against the starvation program being carried out by Israel, it must be because you like Hamas and you're in favor of what they did on October 7th. This isn't even a question. It is not contradictory or hypocritical or anything to say both, yeah, I don't like what that girl did. I don't like that she was just yelling at some guy and, you know, put hands on him. That wasn't great. Same time, you're going to destroy her life for this? You're going to destroy her life for this. She has sinned against the chosen people. Therefore, she now has to have her life destroyed. Okay, you're crazy. You're crazy if you think that. And if you then say, because I'm against destroying her life, I therefore think that Jews should be allowed to be assaulted, then you're not just crazy, you're a liar. You're a liar who's trying to, you know, take the rhetoric to the extremes to try to justify destroying a young girl's life because she's been excited by the intense rhetoric on both sides. I think it's infuriating and unfair. And I actually had a couple of tweets go viral about this. Again, you know, I got a response from Laura Loomer, but you just knew this was coming. You knew that this was what was going to happen next because they'd already passed all these laws to, you know, take some small instance of some crazy liberal girl bothering a guy into a hate crime charge with battery charges and all this sort of stuff. And remember, this happened at the same time that there was a video of the football players, three black kids, beating the crap out of a white kid, beating him so bad that he got a severe concussion and is no longer able to play football. And these things kind of happened on the same day. Both motivated by identity, one by race, one by ethnicity or nationality or religion. The reaction to these two things were wildly different, and what actually happened were wildly different. You'll notice in that last video, the one that the victim himself updated with a laughing face, nothing happened to him. Literally nothing happened to him. Worst thing you can say is she tried to like push his phone away because he was filming her. Okay, in the other case, the guy was beaten unconscious. And we have a little bit of a bifurcation, a discrepancy between the reactions to these two. So you got two situations with two very different societal responses. In situation one, it was a racial attack against a white person. There were three perpetrators and one victim. He was physically beaten, got severe concussions and debilitating injuries. The second situation was a religious attack against a Jewish person. One perpetrator, one victim. Mean words were said angrily. And I guess she touched his phone. In the first case, it was basically total media silence. Not a big story, not a national story. No comments from any politicians of any sort. It really only spread on X and a few local papers picked it up. Mostly silence. The media downplayed and ignored the racial component. I mean, I read articles about the beating. Three black guys said, "We think you said the N-words. We're going to beat you until you're unconscious." Never mentioned the race of perpetrator or the victim, despite the fact that race was a key component of the conflict. Not just an arbitrary observation about what happened, but it was a racially motivated attack. They downplay that. They don't mention it. They don't want it to be a part of the story. The perpetrators who beat the kid, ruined his football career, were not punished. They're still playing football. They're still on the team. They weren't even kicked off the team, let alone have charges against them. In fact, the victim has had to file a personal lawsuit against people who beat him up because they have not been, there have been no charges filed against them. On the other hand, with the other situation, you have a massive nationwide media firestorm. The United States Attorney General took up the case. FSU launches an investigation. The perpetrator was suspended from college and barred from campus. She's now been charged with battery. The USAG office launched a full investigation into anti-Semitism at large at FSU. Congressmen got involved, pressuring FSU to do more to protect Jews. Support services and therapists were brought in to counsel students about the threat of anti-Semitism on their campus. So I say, when a white kid being beaten bloody by a group of black guys because of his race gets totally ignored, but a Jew hearing mean words invokes a nationwide panic and multiple responses from the federal government, we are in an effed up system of Jewish supremacy that makes a mockery of the concept of justice being equality under the law. This is really unacceptable. It is in flagrant disregard of the fundamental characteristics of our country. And the whole point of America existing is that you do not uplift one group of people above another. You do not give special privileges, special protections against one religion over another. This is obviously, flagrantly, an inversion of our First Amendment. And we shouldn't stand for it. And I personally am not going to let the likes of Randy Fine or Laura Loomer, you know, try to portray this as some question about whether Jews are allowed to be beaten or not. Now, the question is whether Americans are being treated fairly or whether one group of people is given significantly outsized attention, care, support, money, resources, laws written for them. I mean, it's just ridiculous. It's outrageous, and it can't go on. It really can't go on. And has to do with why Trump's approval is absolutely cratering. It's the lowest it's ever been, and it's only getting lower. Meanwhile, leaks reveal Netanyahu deliberately imposed starvation in Gaza to force Hamas to surrender. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu rejected calls from senior ministers to advance ceasefire negotiations and deliberately restricted all aid to Gaza in order to force a surrender from Hamas. Internal government transcripts published by Israeli news outlet Channel 13 have revealed. The transcripts are from an Israeli war cabinet meeting on the 1st of March, showing Netanyahu ignored repeated calls from senior defense officials to move to the second phase of ceasefire agreement in order to secure the release of Israeli captives and then to renew hostilities. After Netanyahu instead chose to unilaterally break the ceasefire in March and bar all aid to Gaza in the hopes of forcing a surrender by Hamas. This was despite Hamas complying with the talks, contrary to the war cabinet's expectations. So every time they say just release the hostages, just remember there was an agreement to release the hostages that Benjamin Netanyahu deliberately scuttled and ignored because he wants the conflict to continue, shutting down aid to deliberately create the starvation conditions that they deny creating on purpose. However, while they are simultaneously denying it exists, they're also approving it exists. Most Israelis not bothered by reports of suffering and famine in Gaza, a new poll shows. The vast majority of Israelis say they are not troubled by reports of famine and suffering in Gaza. The survey showed 79% of Jews Jews in Israel were not troubled or troubled at all, whereas 86% of Arab respondents said they were somewhat or very troubled by the reports about the war on Gaza. Arab respondents in the survey refer to Palestinian citizens of Israel. When the question was broken down by political affiliation, it shows there was a far greater concern among the left for the suffering and hunger, with 70% showing concern, whereas only 32% and 6% among the center and right, respectively, are personally troubled by the reports. This survey was conducted between the 27th and 31st of July. So again, it's like they create the starvation conditions, you know, on purpose. A lot of people want to blame Netanyahu for this, but obviously 80% of Israelis are in favor of it as well, according to this poll. I don't think you can blame Netanyahu entirely for that. You also have a pretty interesting story here. Senior Haredi leader threatens global struggle like never before to avoid IDF draft. So the Orthodox community in Israel avoids the draft, evades the draft, and refuses to go fight for the IDF, as is, you know, a requirement for all citizens of Israel. They have, for a long time, not been forced to participate in the army. I really should have gotten into this earlier because it goes to the heart of where Israel goes now. And maybe what I'll do tomorrow is I'll go back and find, like, the videos from, like, the October 8th, 2023, when we talked about this, because it has always been an established fact of this conflict that Israel cannot easily go into Gaza. They do not have the manpower for it. They don't have the men available, let alone people willing to go into the tunnels where they're almost certainly going to be booby-trapped or killed somehow. So, you know, we explained very early on, the only possible way to defeat Hamas in Gaza was to first systematically level the entire place, then go in. But even then, the tunnels still exist. The system still exists. Hamas is still operating at a higher level than it's been for the rest of this conflict. They're still staging ambushes. They've killed more soldiers this month than, like, the rest of the war combined. So they haven't actually defeated Hamas. They still have to go in there with boots on the ground, but they don't have the manpower and they're not willing to sacrifice the soldiers necessary to do it, which is why they need America to be involved, because the Marines would go into the tunnels and clear them out. The IDF soldiers will not and will refuse to, and they'll use robots, if anything. So they're worried about their manpower. So now they're saying, we got to get the Orthodox to join. The Orthodox are saying, we're not going to join. And if you try to make us join, we are going to, quote, perform civil quiet disobedience, including, quote, collapsing large companies or banks. We are getting close to a civil war. But here's the clarification I want to make for you. They're not against the war. Okay. The ultra Orthodox are threatening civil war because they don't want to fight. They're in favor of the war. They just don't want to fight. They just want to continue to, exist in their very comfortable existence where they're paid to study the Torah and never have to fight or work. So that's why they're protesting.
Just got in my methylene blue, ultra methylene blue USP grade from thealexjonesstore.com. And I've heard all the rants and raves about this. I'm real interested to see how I'm going to feel. I'm going to do a third dropper and then some water right now, and I am going to see. Yeah, that's plenty. Maybe that's a little bit more. I'm gonna mix this up, and pretty excited to see how this is gonna work. So after I fully drink this, I will let everybody know the effects of, hopefully, of what is the unlimited power. What's going on, Xers? Jay Rocket here. Just giving y'all an update. It's been an hour past doing the one dropper of the ultra methylene blue USB grade on the alexjonesstore.com. Currently at the gym right now, and it's hard to explain what I feel, other than I do feel the mental clarity. I don't have any cloudy thoughts. My focus seems relaxed, but very on point. And the energy kind of feels clean. No jittery, things like that. I haven't really felt any tingling or anything. Maybe if I'll probably take an extra dropper next time. This is on an empty stomach as well. So definitely feel just cool, calm, and collected. But very focused,
very centralized. It's a very calm Zen feeling. So if you haven't gotten to try this stuff yet, y'all need to go to the AlexJonesStore.com and get your methylene blue today.